Freedom is a key ideal in most countries around the world. And in France, it's a core tenet of our identity. Previously on The Big Picture, we looked at the impact that the rise of the far right is having on French society.
I don't think we need the swastikas or jackboots, really, to have fascism coming into the mainstream of politics.
I'm Miriam Francois, and in this episode, we'll examine how civil liberties, the rights that protect people against state actions, are increasingly under threat. From the right to protest to the protection against police violence, freedom for sections of the French population is being eroded by the very state meant to protect them.
President Macron has hesitated to use the term police violence, preferring to refer to the violence of some officers. Is there a problem of systemic police brutality here in France?
What we've seen in the recent years is an erosion of different civil liberties, targeting originally certain groups but expanding to the whole population.
I think free speech is a huge word that we use now to say everything and anything and nothing at the same time. Because if you speak the things that are authorized in this country, you have the free speech right.
The very same country that poses as a torchbearer for fundamental freedoms cannot take one criticism that there is Islamophobia in France and considers it an incitement to hatred against France.
In suburbs like this one in Grigny, people have been speaking out about the loss of their freedoms as well as police brutality for decades. But more recently, these issues have come to more attention through the crackdown on the yellow vest movements as well as student protests and images of military-style weaponry being used on civilian populations have shocked the nation. At the same time, Macron's government has brought in new legislation which further stifles dissenting voices. For a republic which prides itself on its liberty and a tradition of protest, France is eroding some of its most prized freedoms.
Grigny lies some 20 kilometers outside the center of Paris and is ranked the poorest town in France. I meet with Djigui Diarra, a filmmaker born in Grigny. Djigui's films focus on the lives and struggles of people living in the suburbs. He shows me around a place he calls his inspiration.
Là, c'est la mosquée de Grigny. D'accord. Et là, il y a l'église, en fait, qui est une église fréquentée par les chrétiens et qui, parfois, l'église est prêtée à la communauté tamoule. Donc ici, il y a tout. Il y a des Noirs, des Arabes, des Indiens, des Sri Lankais, des Blancs aussi. Bon, c'est une espèce rare un peu maintenant, mais voilà, il y a un peu de tout, quoi, tu vois.
Djigui takes me to the local community center, a place he chose to premiere his latest film. It tells the story of a group of young people and a fatal encounter with the police.
Et dis-moi, de tous les sujets que tu aurais pu choisir pour le film, tu as choisi de faire un film sur les violences policières. Mm-hmm. Quelle a été l'inspiration pour ce film?
Alors, j'ai choisi de faire un film sur les violences policières parce que, avec mes amis et certaines personnes de mon entourage, on est aux premières loges de cette injustice, en fait. Et moi, je suis un cinéaste et voilà, il y a eu pas mal de films qui traitaient de cette question ou qui l'abordaient brièvement, mais je me reconnaissais pas, en fait. Je trouvais que c'était trop politiquement correct, trop édulcoré et que c'était dangereux, justement, parce que c'est nous qui, dans la vie quotidienne, dans la vie de tous les jours, dealons avec ce genre de situation. Mais notre objectif était de redonner la parole à ces jeunes qu'on a trop souvent méprisés, qu'on a trop souvent mis de côté, reprendre autorité sur notre narration Et nous, que ce soit dans les médias, que ce soit dans certains films, quand on parle des habitants des quartiers, les Noirs, les Arabes, les gens de banlieue, etc., ils ne parlent pas pour nous. Ils parlent de nous, mais ils ne parlent pas pour nous, en fait.
Et on parle souvent des violences policières presque de manière isolée, en fait. C'est comme s'il y avait la guerre, en fait, dans les quartiers.
Oui.
Mais il y a un contexte plus large à ce qui se passe concernant les violences policières.
Mmh.
Tu pourrais nous éclaircir un petit peu sur le contexte plus large qui n'est peut-être pas souvent discuté, qui fait qu'on a l'impression que c'est juste une guerre d'un côté, les gens s'haïssent.
Non, en fait, ça s'engouffre dans un terreau déjà imbibé de problématiques, comme je disais, le chômage, le décrochage scolaire, il y a du racisme, il y a de la négrophobie, il y a d'islamophobie, il y a des préjugés, il y a des directives aussi données. Enfin voilà, on a eu... Comment certaines institutions traitent les minorités, que ce soit la police, que ce soit même l'hôpital, que ce soit le SAMU. Nous, on a peur d'eux, mais parce que justement, notre corps est en danger. Notre corps, il risque d'être détruit et d'être anéanti tout simplement par une malencontreuse... rencontre avec la police ou, bref, les officines gouvernementales qui sont dans la répression, quoi. Quoi qu'il arrive, on sera toujours là pour dénoncer ce fléau. Et on voit en ce moment qu'on n'est pas tout seul. Et c'est très bien, mais c'est dommage qu'on a pu voir cette, comment dirais-je, sympathie et cette aide que quand c'était des Blancs qui se faisaient fracasser avec les Gilets jaunes. Nous, ça fait 40-50 ans qu'on se fait démonter de tous les côtés par la police, des mains arrachées, on est borgne, etc. Pff, c'est des Noirs et des Arabes, tranquilles.
Il y a beaucoup de gens qui vont penser à la France, ils vont dire c'est le pays de la liberté, de l'égalité, de la fraternité.
C'est faux. C'est archi faux. En fait, on est dans une société où malheureusement, moi en tant que jeune homme noir musulman, je vais parler de certaines problématiques, on va pas trop me calculer. Tandis que si une femme blanche vivant à Neuilly-sur-Seine ou dans le 16e parle des problématiques des gens des quartiers, l'attention elle sera particulière. Si moi j'arrive, je parle de ça, on va porter une attention, c'est dommage. Mais bon, on a besoin de tout le monde pour s'en sortir, essayons de trouver une solution. Et tant qu'on ne trouvera pas de solution à ce fléau, la France n'ira pas bien, tout simplement.
A year before the pandemic, the head of France's human rights watchdog described a steady erosion of civil liberties in France. In 2021, the European Committee for the Prevention of Torture raised concerns over violence and abuse suffered in police custody. And in the same year, a coalition of organizations filed a class action lawsuit arguing that the government had failed to take measures to prevent racial profiling and systemic racial discrimination by the police. How would you describe the current state of civil liberties in France today?
I mean, from what you've mentioned, I'm not going to say everything is new. For example, you talked about police brutality in custody. That's something that exists for a really long time. Similarly, with racial profiling, that's a long-term issue and it hasn't started in the recent years. However, Amnesty International France has been working more and more on its own country, on France, because indeed what we've seen in the recent years is an erosion of different civil liberties, targeting originally certain groups, but expanding to the whole population. Notably, we've seen that during protests, and during the Yellow Vest protests, where you had a very violent response from the police. We have over 30 people who were mutilated just because they were taking part in protests, and thousands of injuries. It wasn't new practices, it's practices that existed before and expanded broader to the population.
In France and in the public debate, human rights, fundamental freedom, civil liberties have shifted from a space of objectivism to a space of belief. People in France believe that because they are the country of human rights, then these human rights are guaranteed forever. Because we are the country that prides itself on being a torchbearer of free speech, we think that we are protected from infringing on this free speech. And this is why year after year, the situation on the ground gets worse. What was done to Muslim minorities is now applied to any dissenting movement criticizing the government. And this is why the situation is so bad, with an international audience not really understanding what is going on in France, France becoming a second-tier country in terms of human rights, and everybody abroad taking it for granted that this country, that they view as a romantic country, is protected from this type of issue. This is the worst.
The first time I went to a protest, it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It was a protest against climate change. And that was actually a super nice afternoon fighting for something important, but we had a nice time. Nowadays, when I go to a protest, for example, last protest was against the violence against women, it's not the same atmosphere anymore. I go there and I know something might go wrong. I go there and I'm ready for whatever's coming, whatever. It comes from the police because there are as many protesters as policemen around us. I'm ready to have people insult me because I'm a Muslim woman and people think Muslim women cannot be feminists. I know people who don't go to a protest because they're scared, and I can't blame them because some people go and they are being harmed. There may be some are dead then. So we go and we know we have a lot of things to lose when we used to go for things to gain on the protest. And now people think twice before going.
I want to talk to you about the organizations on the ground who are defending civil liberties and how they are treated. You used to be the director of an NGO that was shut down, the Collective Against Islamophobia in France. Is this something that you think of as a wider pattern?
The French government is now openly taking ownership of their political agenda, which is basically to seek and destroy any form of political criticism of systemic racism. When you block people based on what they wear, what system of belief they have, what is the color of their skin, well, that's basic discrimination. Everybody around the world seems to understand this, except France. So now any organization that will uphold a progressive agenda will be deemed an enemy of the Republic and labeled as such by the government. If you are an organization supporting victims of discrimination, enemy of the Republic. If you are a Muslim women organization trying to promote inclusion through work, education, civic participation, enemy of the Republic. If you are an academic working on these issues, Islamo-leftist. If you are a Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, you are an accomplice to enemies of the Republic.
Or in your case?
Or in our case, human rights organization, like the one I used to work with up until 2017, which eventually has been shut down in 2020 for claiming that there is Islamophobia in France, which was deemed by the State Council as an incitement to hatred against France. So the very same country that poses as a torchbearer for fundamental freedoms and freedom of speech cannot take one criticism that there is Islamophobia in France and considers it an incitement to hatred against France. This speaks for itself.
Miana, I know that you've written books that talk about civil liberties, that try and educate people about civil liberties. And I'm wondering, is that in some way a response to the current climate? And so what have felt like the most urgent areas that you've wanted to address?
I think for me, because that comes from a personal perspective, what made me wrote this book was Islamophobia. Islamophobia that I was living in my everyday life, Islamophobia that my sisters were living, physical aggressions, insults in the streets. At some point, I was like, I can't do this anymore, so I have to write this down. But while I was writing it, I thought we are as French as anybody in this country, and we don't have to prove ourselves. We don't have to show people we deserve to be there. We are here, and we are staying. So that's what I wanted to show in this book.
I also think that in this atmosphere, there is a huge responsibility of the authorities because you had a stigmatization from a very high level of political personalities. There is a huge responsibility in the way that we address the issue of so-called terrorist attacks because, of course, the authority has to take measures. But a lot of these measures were based on surveillance, and the way that the legislation or the implementation of the legislation was framed would target any Muslim. And that doesn't come from people on the ground. That comes from the state and kind of legitimate the kind of hostile reaction you can meet. And I think it's extremely important because the state has a responsibility to implement freedom of religion and to protect people from that kind of aggression. And in France, the high-level politicians that contribute to this hostile environment. And for us, it's extremely dangerous because that's also where we lose some of the freedoms, including freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom to go free to public spaces. And I completely understand how painful it can be to not be able to go to a feminist protest just because we wear a veil.
The French government might try and say that these restrictions should be justified, you know, at least some of them by, you know, clearly there is a complex security situation facing France. You know, can we say that some of these measures are justified but have maybe gone a little too far in exceptional cases? Or do you see this differently?
Security is at its best when it's seamless, invisible, specifically targeted and guided by indication that there is an actual danger and that there are actual criminal activities going on. But when you spread thin your resources targeting any person who looks Muslim, who goes to the mosque, who has any even minor basic political dissent, then not only are you harming their own fundamental freedom, and as you rightly pointed, everybody's fundamental freedom, but you're failing on the security front.
I want to talk about police brutality. In 2020, we saw the shocking pictures of music producer Michel Zecler being beaten by police in his own music studio. That had come not that long after the death of Cédric Chouviat in a police chokehold. President Macron has hesitated to use the term police violence, preferring to refer to the violence of some officers. Anne-Sophie, are you confident using the term police violence, and is there a problem of systemic police brutality here in France?
I'm comfortable in using the term police violence, even though it's, we would say illegal use of force by the police as a jurist. But I think it's the same as when you talk about domestic violence. It doesn't mean that every husband is going to beat his wife. It's just that there is a systemic issue. And when it comes to police in France, of course, there is an individual responsibility of the one person who was carrying the baton that hit the person. However, it happens so often, either in certain suburbs or during protests, that we have to question the whole system. We have to question what kind of mission are given to the police, what kind of training, what kind of strategy, what kind of weapons, because it happens so often that it's not only the responsibility of individuals. We also have to question the hierarchy. And it's for us, it's a massive problem that the authorities are not, because, again, we are in this situation of denial, where if you don't recognize a problem, you don't go for a solution. And we can't even have a constructive dialogue with the authorities because they don't want to see that it is a systematic issue and that now it's time for long-term reforms, deep reforms in the policing system.
The justice system is meant to protect people's basic freedoms, of course, but there have been concerns about the police watchdog, haven't there, which is a kind of self-monitoring watchdog. How effective, in your experience, is the judicial system in providing the means for accountability for victims of police violence?
Yeah, the organization in charge of, like, investigating police violence, we call it the washing machine. Because every time there is a complaint there, it comes clean. The police officer comes clean. So police officers are supposed to control and repress other police officers, and eventually in the reality they find that they've done nothing wrong, and of course the cameras were not there to prove it, and it goes away. And this is why France has been found time and again guilty of discriminating and guilty of condoning this police targeting of minorities.
Anne-Sophie, in your work, do you find that this impunity is validated through the hierarchies? I mean, how easy it is for an organization like Amnesty to monitor what's actually going on in terms of how the police accounts itself?
I mean, first of all, it's very difficult because we lack the data. There is no statistics about injuries or deaths due to police operation. The IGPN, the organization monitoring the police, which is indeed a group of police officers, they publish certain data, but very limited, and it's been only 2 years they've started to do so. And also, we don't have any data about the complaints and the legal follow-up and the sanctions that were taken, criminal or administrative. You have to understand, judges, they work on a daily basis with the police. And that's very normal. I mean, if a crime is committed, who is going to write the report is a police officer, and it's going to bring it to the judge. But what happens when the police is the accused? And how does a judge work with that kind of situation? Because it's their daily collaborators. They work together. There are solutions, and there are solutions that are implemented in other countries that we suggest about how civil society could be involved in controlling the police, how the judges that are following the cases could be from another district, for example. But since France doesn't recognize the problem, nothing has been reformed yet.
We often hear about the importance of free speech as a Republican value. But we've also seen, you know, rappers branded as Islamists and pressured not to perform. We've seen attempts to ban pro-Palestinian protests, people convicted of contempt for burning an effigy of President Macron, police officers detaining 10-year-olds to question them on their views on Charlie Hebdo cartoons. I think, is there a disconnect, in your view, between the international maybe perception of France when it comes to free speech and your experience of that on the ground?
I think free speech is a huge word that we use now to say everything and anything and nothing at the same time. Because if you speak the things that are authorized in this country, you have the free speech, right? If me, for example, I want to talk about Islamophobia or state Islamophobia, no free speech for me. So it depends on what you have to say. So I don't think that's a right which is for everybody today. And in the text, the legal text, of course, it is a super important right we have in France. And thank God we have this right in our constitution. But in practically, this is not true that everyone has the right to speak. For example, in my small level, but I speak about Islamophobia on the social networks, on Instagram, Facebook, to just like for my book, to educate people, to raise awareness. And I have been censored by Instagram a few times because I talked about Islamophobia. And when you come to my Facebook page, you have a warning message saying that I publish dangerous content and that you should be careful if you click on my name. And I'm like nobody. I'm just an author and I wrote one book and I'm just me, a Muslim woman in this country.
If you are in a position of power and you assume freedom of speech, what it means basically is you have the freedom to insult, to debase individuals or communities, and they have the right and the freedom to just accept it, take it and shut up. Because the history, the recent history in France has shown that it's okay on national TV to debase women, and it will be taken as sense of humor. But if these women get angry or respond on the set, then they are overreacting. It's okay to imitate African accents, Asian accents, Arab or Middle Eastern accents. But if these minorities claim that this is a form of humiliation and somehow a form of cultural racism, then they don't have a sense of humor. It's okay to publish cartoons or first pagers claiming that refugees are rapers, and Arab, black, and Muslim women are just here for the public helps and the subsidies. But if these people respond back, then they are provoking and they are the enemies of the Republic. Of course, it's not easy. Of course, it is hard. And I can say just for myself that I don't have a clue of what you guys are going through on a daily basis as women, Muslim women, black women, Arab women. I'm just a man, a volunteer in one organization. But this is our story, and this is how we affect change.
I would say as Muslim women, we have also allies, feminist allies, other organizations that we didn't have as allies a year ago. So this is good. This is good news. And the activist landscape is changing in France, I think, because these minor groups, discriminated groups, go together as a bigger group. And this is really good news. But at the end, the government is still there, the president is still there, and the repression is still there. So I would say it's hard, but we're still there, and I think we will be there all the time that we aren't being discriminated.
The erosion of civil liberties always begins with the most marginalized, but it never ends there. There is no loss of freedom which doesn't affect each and every one of us. Police brutality is possibly the clearest example of this, but there are other less obvious examples. The closure of local organizations, increasing surveillance of protesters. Freedoms are hard won, but often their disappearance is a very gradual process. And before you know it, the very ideals you believe the state is premised on have vanished.